Welcome back to Rethink Real Estate, guys. Today, I have a guest, Chris Bowers. Now, Chris is, I think, probably one of the more real episodes that we've had so far on Rethink Real Estate. I love the raw nature of this episode and the perspective of the answers that he provided in the sense of going with the flow a little bit from a self-aware perspective, understanding where he has added different parts of his journey. So for example, when I ask him about some life hacks and some podcasts and some books and things along those lines, you know, very real in the sense of that, hey, look, sometimes I listen to politics heavy, sometimes I do this, but I'm just really aware when I've had enough that I move on to the next part. And again, you'll see that in the episode. I really got a lot out of that. But Chris is partners with Brittany, who we had on the episode, or the husband of Brittany Bowers, who we had also on Rethink Real Estate, and going through the journey and the realization of them building a team and then descaling, I think is very, very valuable. Not to mention as well as the lead source perspective of the business, where they were getting a great deal of leads into the business and they were sort of falsifying their own growth and their own profit. Chris is a very real character. Very much enjoyed having him on Rethink Real Estate, and do believe this is a very valuable episode for you. Welcome to Rethink Real Estate. My name is Ben Brady, and this is a real estate podcast aimed to deliver sales strategies, marketing tips, and business insights from industry experts and myself to build a listing-focused business for the future. Let's get into it. Chris, welcome to Rethink Real Estate.
Hey, thanks for having me, man. We went from a meeting at a mastermind where we had, you know, we had our names on tables and we met each other there, and here we are.
Indeed. And do you know what? There's a sigh of relief when I've got somebody that, you know, is a podcast host themselves coming on. You know, it's like you kind of get the gist of it. You know that there's not going to be too many curveballs in the conversation. You know, I'm sure that you've had guests on before on your podcast, which we'll make sure is in the show notes. I know you've been doing it for a little while now, but you get guests on where you're halfway through the interview and you're sort of like, oh, geez, I'm losing things to talk about. What's going on here?
Yeah. And do you know what I've noticed? That, you know, whenever, if you do a podcast and you're a guest on a show, you sometimes like forget because you're just carrying on a conversation, and all of a sudden you start interviewing the person and you're like, oh, wait, hold up. Like, I'm the guest. So if there's ever some questions I'm throwing back at you, it's because I recorded a podcast about 5 hours ago where I was, you know, had a guest on the show and I was the host. And so now the tables are turned. So if I start asking you questions, be like, hey, hold up. Like, this is about you, not me. So,
well, we'll make sure to remind you of that either way. But yeah. I'm excited to get into things because we've had Brittany on the podcast, okay, who really runs the operational element of your business and came in from that perspective, but now is obviously one of the lead agents alongside you. And we've heard her story of joining into your basically real estate career, you know, midway through, so to speak, okay. So wanted to just sort of kick things off with, you know, getting your background of how you got into real estate. You're obviously a young person now, but realistically, how young you were when you did get into it, in, you know, the Arizona marketplace or and in a competitive market. I think you guys are in one of the more competitive marketplaces of all of North America, being the Scottsdale, Arizona marketplace where you guys are based. So would love to hear your journey so far.
Yeah, man. So I'm 39 now, but I'll be 40 here in a few weeks. But I got into the business when I was 22. And so I just was, you know, interesting road. Like, I just wasn't good at like traditional like school. And so I was always a learner. So it wasn't a learning problem. It was like the topic that they wanted me to learn, I was not interested in. Thankfully, I came from a household. My parents were both entrepreneurs. And so my mom, I'm the youngest kid, and I think she had me by the age of 19. And so you got to think that through. So like, they had a drop out of high school. I don't think either of my parents have even graduated high school. And they went on though to be like uber successful. And so they built a company. And so I was just around a household of entrepreneurs. And so education was not like a priority in our household. Now, I'm not saying that I preach that to everybody, but I'm just super thankful that they accepted me for not caring about the topics in school that were being taught. And so I had no real, I had no real punishment for a teacher saying like, well, I'm going to give you a D or I'm going to flunk you. Like, that just wasn't like how we graded ourselves in our house. So I start there. Like, I have business parents that are just, weren't into school, just went out and were entrepreneurs. And so I think they could see that in me at a young age, just by those few things that you do, you know, it's like, oh, the lemonade stand, or I'm selling, you know, magazine clippings of like famous people. I'm buying a, you know, a $5 magazine and I'm tearing out like people in there, you know, and putting them into like a frame and I'm selling them for $3 and making a profit off a magazine. I think they could see that at a young age that I was doing that stuff at school. And so they could see the little Bowers entrepreneur in me. So they just kind of allowed that to happen. So then it goes into, and I'll try to make this short, but at 16, I'm really into skateboarding, like street boards, like street skateboarding. Go out in the streets and I'm jumping down stairs and rails. And my parents, go figure, they were like, let's open up a skateboard shop. Oh. And this was like a probably $250,000 to $300,000 project. Inventory is actually interesting. And so they allowed me to do that in school. So even though we would say maybe I was the owner of that at 16, you know, really, I think they were the owner of it and just allowing me to operate this business. But I'd still say I owned a skate shop when I was in high school. And so even in high school, it was a, I ran a business, which is very unique. And so about 19, decided that that wasn't going to be the path for me. But once again, I was thankful for being around that entrepreneur spirit. I have to say, as I got older, I realized that maybe my project of the skateboard industry was a tax write-off for parents that made a lot of money. So I don't think that they necessarily cared about this. So I learned a lot as I got older on what they were really trying to teach me. I didn't really accept it or probably appreciate it until I got older. And so at about 19, 20, got out of the skateboard shop, actually didn't like it anymore. And so I'd asked my mom, hey, what should I do? Real estate was one of the options. I said, hey, I don't want to go to college. Obviously, I don't even know if they'd let me in. I did go to one day, interestingly enough. I went one day of community college, didn't go back. I was like, nope, tried it, not for me. she said, maybe get your real estate license. I did. I was 22. I have still the pictures. It took me 5 times to get my real estate license. I had longer hair, looked like a skateboarder, somebody that shouldn't have succeeded in real estate. I think I sold like 6 homes my first year. And then it just went from there, man. And so it's 18 years in. I think in 2020, I might've sold 132 homes. I think the year after it was 108. I think last year it might've been, I actually don't even know the numbers for last year. I think it was like 65 or 70. Interestingly enough, I'll say this openly. I've come to terms with actually not trying to keep up with unit count in my life. I've noticed in the industry that there's a lot of awards and they're not usually profitable awards. They're usually based around like brokerages and what they want us to get awards for. And they're really into the agent count. And I'm really into like the profit business. And so I've realized that there's some things that I was doing that were getting the unit count up, but not actually serving me or Brittany and I's model and how we want to run our business. So even though unit count has went down a little bit over the years, I'd have to say I'm in a juggling act right now of trying to produce and make a good amount of money while living a life around it. And I'm finally, I guess at 39, openly saying that out loud, that like, I feel like we've got to find this healthy balance of like living a life while making a profit and not trading our whole life to try to build a company that might not be highly profitable.
Hey, look, that's my journey, man. Chris, that's one of the things that I think sort of is a perfect segue into what we're going to talk next. But first of all, congratulations on the journey so far.
Thanks.
I think that the one thing that, you know, where Calistra and I met yourself and Brittany, we really resonated with the two of you, hence the reason me reaching out to you. You can just tell that you guys are just quality individuals that certainly are, you know, people that, you know, care. And ultimately, regardless of whether you did 1,000 deals a year or you did 10 deals a year, I think that you guys would take every individual client experience from just, you know, the people that you are and make sure that it's something that is something to behold or something that that helps them along in the journey. But the thing that I think that is one of the things outside of all of the transaction count and the journey that you've been on that really triggered, you know, or perked me up when we were talking to Brittany anyway, and you've really touched on it there, is that you're not about the unit count, you're about the profitability of your business. And you've gone through some interesting experiences with the Zillow Flex program, growing a team out, and then bringing that back into more of a profitability model. I'd love you to talk us through the realizations of that, what that journey created for you.
Yeah, so it was probably 2019. You know, we got the Zillow Flex account. Mm. And in Arizona, basically to explain this to people around, you know, that might not have the Zillow Flex account, it's basically, we don't pay for leads. It was, we give you leads, hold you accountable to a conversion rate. If you can keep that conversion rate up, we'll give you more leads, but you pay us a referral on the back end. And so you know, I really just figured out that like I had to get agents to accomplish that. They wanted a 35% off the top. And then they wanted, you know, it was a 35% off the top. And then I couldn't keep up with the account. So I would just hire agents. So I think at one time we had 14 agents on the team. And even though we were doing good volume, you know, like we as the company were making, you know, a little bit, it was healthy. I'd say it was still a really good relationship and we profited off of it. It came to a spot where I was getting on phone calls with Zillow and I felt like they were actually my boss. Mm. And so I'd be doing these weekly meetings and like, hey, you need to grow agent count. And I'm just like, I'm also looking at a P&L and I'm like, every agent costs money. And they just wanted to look at it like, hey, if you just got more agents, we'll give you more leads. And I'm like, that sounds sexy. You know, it sounds sexy until like I run a business here. So I've got to know like, what do I really want to bite and what do I not? And so went down that journey for 2 years with them. And it was a really healthy relationship. But I think like what I've noticed as I've gotten older, there's good and there's great. And I'm sometimes just willing to like burn a ship that's actually really, really good. Like some people around me would be like, what are you doing? And I'm like, I feel like I'm like supposed to do this and I'm going to do it. So as I went on that journey, I actually kind of bowed out of that account because I felt like they were controlling more of my business. Hey, we want you to use our title company, use our lender. And there was scores on stuff. I just felt like I wasn't an entrepreneur anymore. And so I don't bash anybody who has that account. Just wasn't for me anymore. So as those unit counts went away, you know, I'd always been for 16 years an agent that was a repeat and referral. I mean, doing 50, 60 units a year just off people texting me and saying, hey, will you help my friend or family member buy a house or sell a house? And started going down this road. So here's how it happened, man, is I think in 1 year, there was 1 year, I don't know if it was 2019 or 2020, on my P&L, there was $700,000 cost of sale to buyer's agents. Hmm. Now, you could say like no one's crying for you. If that's a 50-50 split, that means 700 on the buying side's on my end of the company.
Yep.
But I started hanging around with different people. I started going to masterminds and I always have, but I started going into different masterminds, maybe with people doing a little bit more business than me or just a little bit smarter business owners. And the question was, is I met this guy named Dave Jasinski. And he was on a podcast I was listening to as a guest. And he was talking about his life. And he said he had sold like 150 homes, has 5 kids under the age of 14. His goal is to be a really good dad, be at all their events, and leverage this out the proper way where he can make really good profits. Well, I hit that guy up. I called him up. I went to his office. He was in my state of Arizona. And he said, hey, let me ask you a question. Do you have a lead generation problem or a leverage problem? I said, well, I closed 132 homes this year. I don't think I have a lead generation problem. Maybe I have a leverage problem. And so he started asking me questions and he's like, hey, that's 700,000, you know, on the P&L, why? And I was like, oh, like it splits with agents. And he's like, well, why do you have the agents? And I'm like, well, cause I traveled 20 times this year. So like, how would you work with buyers and travel? And so I had to reconcile. He's like, well, why don't you just hire a showing partner? And I'm like, I've heard of buyer's agents, right? 50, you know, yeah, whatever the split is, but a buyer's agent, yeah, a lot of split. They handle all the clients. He's like, well, how about like, what's the hardest part of a buyer? And I'm like, well, the showing of homes. And he's like, well, is the initial consultation hard? And I'm like, no. And is like talking about all the details of the deal hard? No. It's just the being on call. That's the hardest part of being a buyer's agent. It's just like waking up in the morning and being like, oh, you want to see 6 homes? And I had a day already planned. That's hard.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so he opened me up that I could hire somebody on salary and pay them maybe some type of percentage through the title company so that they're still motivated on a Sunday at 9 to take that, you know, so give them some type of dream where they can get out a calculator like I can and make some goals that if I do more, I could make more. And that dude just changed. Meeting Dave Jasinski, it changed my whole entire life. Like I get chills still saying it because it gave me back something where I could still know the client, work with the client, do all the things I wanted to do still with that client, but then not do what I didn't want to do anymore. And that was show homes. And it was the first time where I saw like, ooh, like 700,000 of this can come back to my side. Maybe just leave 150 over there on that side for these people, but I can take back. And so that's where it came about, man, was meeting somebody who challenged me to do something differently. And here's what I think is probably the coolest part of the story is I left his office and he gave me the job ad to put on WiseHire. And I'm just like, I just duplicated it. I just took his name out. And it's instead of Dave Jasinski team, right, I put the Bowers team. And I posted that on WiseHire. I had no idea what this was 2 days before I did this. But he said, here's the job ad, change your team name, get a WiseHire account. I was like, what's that? He's like, just Google it. I did. So I got a WiseHire account. I put that job ad up. And within like 5 days, I had hundreds of applicants. And then I'm like sitting on video on Zoom with people and interviewing some in other states wanting this job. And I'm like, I just knew about like 2 days ago. I didn't even know what this job was. And so I had this pain point. I saw somebody who was doing it. I hired for it. I hired two people for it. One actually I took out of that role and took into my personal assistant for like my personal life. One I kept in that role and he's still in that role. So like today, right now, he just texted me right before we got on, said, hey, I'm done showing Gallup homes. Gallup was an internet lead that came in 2 weeks ago. And I had the consultation with him, high level consultation, what he needs me for, you know, the captain of the ship. He drove in yesterday from California, got to his hotel that my assistant booked for him. And Nathan, my showing partner, picked him up this morning, showed him 8 homes. And I just got a message from Nathan, my showing partner, said, hey, done with Gallup. He wants you to give him a call, likes a few of the properties, but wants to have a conversation with you. Headed to go meet Joan to show her a home right now. Joan was an internet lead that came in 3 weeks ago. I have her house on the market listed. She wants to go see a home. I didn't even know that took place today. I've been in meetings back to back today. All that's going down, and all while I'll pay him a salary and I'll give him 10% on the back end for being that on call. He's at that stage of his life where he's hungry like that. Yep. And I'm at the stage of my life where I want to do travel, run my business. And my biggest thing is I don't want to be on call anymore. And so I'm totally fine with working buyer clientele. I actually love it. But I want to talk to you about the consultation. I want to talk to you about what I can do to get you into the houses, the negotiations, everything that's super important. And then I'm just very fair in these consultations that I have with my client on Zoom. You know, it's internet lead, talk on the phone, Zoom the next day, and I'm going over a high level conversation. I tell them, hey, here's the deal. I'm like the pilot of the plane. And so when you get on this plane, like you want your pilot to get you there with a little bit of turbulence, just a little. You'll take a little, but like someone else is going to check you in and scan your ticket. Someone's going to get you a drink. Someone's going to put on the luggage, but like, you're just like, pilot, please get me there safely with a little bit of turbulence, you know, with no bumps, please. No bumps, as little as possible. And so I just tell them that's my goal. And then I look at somebody on a Zoom and I say, hey, here's what's going to happen is Thursday night, you're going to want to look at homes. And I go on date night Thursday night with my wife at 6 p.m. So at 5:45, I sold 108 homes last year. I tell them, like, at 5:45 p.m., you're going to find the perfect home. And I'm in the hospitality business where you deserve a yes. And your yes, though, is when you text into our office, Nathan's going to get out there and show you homes. And because I'm going to go to date night with my wife because she's a huge priority to me. And on Sunday at 10, I go to church. And so, but guess what? By golly, at 9:42 a.m., right before church, the best home ever is going to hit the market. What do you need? You need to go look at that house. And my answer, I'm in the hospitality business. The answer is yes. But it can't be yes to me that day because church is very important to me. So I'm a principled person that has other priorities outside of selling homes. Selling homes is very important to me, but I can give you a yes without it always being me being there. But here's what's going to happen is when you look at that home while I'm in church, on my drive home, I'm going to call you. If you don't like that house, cool. It's not mine. If you love it, let's talk the details. Let's get that house. And I think if you just can say that out loud to people, you can build a process around that where they love it, they appreciate it. And I think the best thing is they respect it.
Well, I think that you've not only given the journey of realization to where we're at the moment and where you've got your business and you're building it, you've then also given us the understanding of what structure that you've put in place from a salary position versus buyer's agent relationships where people will let you down when they're a 1099. And you know, they're independent contractors where you are technically not their boss, regardless of whether you're the primary source of their income. They still don't see it that way, regardless of how hard you try. Okay. The next element of this is then you've obviously got them incentivized to an extent as well, but there's some type of guarantee in that. And leading through that, you've also given the people that are listening to this episode, the scripts and the way to conceptually put it to the client. I don't know what more you could give. The only thing, actually, question for you, how much do you pay? What's the salary that you pay them? Like, is it a big enough salary? Like, again, if you feel uncomfortable giving us a number, Chris.
No, it's $32,000 salary. Yep, it's $32,000 salary and it's 10% at the closing. I actually think I could have did that 5%. I'm not going to take that back because I love the guy who does it, but I could do it different or better next time.
Yeah.
I think what's probably the most interesting thing is the guy, Dave Jasinski, who taught this to me. I talk to him regularly. He's like the tinker of businesses. Like that's what he does. And I like him being kind of ahead of me with these experiments, and he's already doing it a different way. So I don't know. I don't know where you're at, but here we have what's called Showami. It's an app kind of like Uber where you can just like request somebody to show homes for you and a realtor will go show up for like $40. So
right.
Dave taught me this model of a salaried agent with a 10% or some type of percentage to keep them hungry. And he's now already doing it differently. Well, what's interesting is we talk a lot. We look at numbers and I trust him. He's now doing it no salary, no 10%,
right.
And just a $40 a house. Now, the question would be that people are going to ask, I did too. He's proven it works. He's selling higher end homes and still doing it this way. Is it's all scripting. Because the only time you would think something doesn't work is expectations. So as long as expectations are set, no one's usually disappointed. So on the consultation now, he says it where, hey, he says everything that I just said, except for now he'll say, here's the deal. I have a network of 5,000 agents in Arizona that will show you homes. So you're going to have somebody probably different. So I'm in the hospitality business. The answer is always going to be yes, but it's probably going to be someone different every time. Just note, these agents aren't like me. I'm trying to go out there and run the game. You know, I sell a lot of real estate. These agents might be newer. I don't know, but they'll get you into the house. But here's the deal. When they get you into the house, there's no real skill in opening the door and you're going to have some questions. So no need to ask them questions. They're getting you into that house just like I would. And so the only thing me personally being there would be, what are the questions you have? So just get a note out on your phone, the house, what it sell across the street, what's the community center hours and how old's the roof, you know, write those down. Just like if I was there, you'd ask me, just write them down. Don't ask that person. And then when we're done and I call you, ask me those questions, I'll get them done. So he's already doing it another way where he's not paying the salary, but I think the most important thing that he's doing is not the salary, it's those 10% kickers.
Yep.
And so if you're doing enough units, like, so it's interesting now, like my first pain point was how to get 700,000 back and I did it. And now it's like, now there's even more. So it's like, I'm finding, man, that we'll get into these rooms and we're always hearing, and I did for years, like more units, more units, more units. And I'm going into the rooms and I'm like, how about we don't focus as much on more units and maybe we milk more out of the transaction where we still give the client the best customer service and maybe better customer service than us being solo and figuring how to get a lot more of the profit back from one transaction. And so it's like, do we really need to go close 40 more units or could we just leverage this out the best way where we can keep more money? And so that's what I was kind of started at the beginning and we transitioned to this is, I think we go into more and more of these masterminds and we hear more and more and more and more units, 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 units. And I'm like, let's talk P&L and quality of life and start there.
Yeah, I think that, you know, that's a wonderful philosophy that you can bring to the table for the real estate community, because I think that there's a part of this, Chris, and you would understand this obviously being, you know, at the pinnacle of the industry that you are and the communities that you are basing yourself in from around the same realtors, is that a lot of the training that's out there is coming from, when I say community heads, I mean like heads of brokerages or heads of real estate companies, where they're tailoring or paying the people that are going to be going through and doing the training. So their priority is just to get you to do more units, because at the end of the day, you being more profitable as a business, they don't really make their clip off that you being more profitable. They make their clip off you doing more. And I think that the community of real estate needs to be aware of the source of where the training is coming from. And that primarily, like even now, like you're seeing like some of these big ticket trainers, you know, in the big tickets circles and the big names, they're saying, hey, don't sign up for monthly coaching, give us a percentage of your business. So they're just compelling people to do more units as well and not looking on the profitability element of their business and going through that focus. So if we can change that mentality, because the thing that I really am fascinated what you have done is that you've kind of broken the mold. And when I say you, I mean Brittany and you, your collective you, is that you guys have gone down the path of getting onto the hamster wheel of what everybody's telling you to do, get leads and build a team. But you've managed to get off where most agents wouldn't have gotten off, because they love the feeling of being busy regardless of whether they're making money or not. They want to fill their day full of just stuff so that therefore they feel like they have a purpose rather than the end outcome of the profitability, which is what we're really all in it to do outside of maybe the client-facing service element side.
Yeah, man. I mean, I have clear expectations when I sit down at the beginning of the year on what I want to do. And my goal is, is I want to deliver the highest customer service that I can for my clients with the least amount of people and the least amount of expenses so that I can make the most amount of profits to buy the most assets I can so that I can bounce out of this business and not come back to it. And so I'm very clear. So like, that's actually, I mean, I can say that like clockwork when somebody asks me, what's the mission of my company?
Yep.
That's the mission of my company. And it starts off with the best customer service. That's the customer facing, best customer service, internally facing with the least amount of people to do it. That's like, I don't need to have no ego with a big team, like best customer service, least amount of people so that I can maximize profits, so that I can buy assets, so that I can bounce out of this business one day and not have to look back. And so that's where, you know, I think though, keeping that to the core of me is like, I want to maximize profits while still giving really, really good customer service is why, I mean, we're just, we want to buy more assets. I mean, we have 20 rentals now, single family homes, we want more. Yeah. And so like, but that's the goal. So it's like, I'm not going after this, like, you know, sell more, sell more, sell more. I'm like, I want to have conversations anymore with people. And it's hard to get in rooms where people want to be vulnerable and talk about this stuff, because I think you can ask a few questions of people in this industry and find out a lot. So it's like, if you just ask somebody like, how many, like, and I wouldn't do it because I don't think it would be proper. I wish we could and it not sound improper, but like, you can just ask like a few questions, you know, and be like, I could ask someone a few questions and I would know a lot. Cause like unit count doesn't answer that for me. And how many team members, but it's everywhere I go. It's like, how many units, how many team members? And I'm like, I'm kind of like, what's your net worth?
Yeah.
You know, like, wouldn't that be weird if I asked that back?
No, but it's so funny though.
But like, that's the rooms I think we got to get into where it's like, let's not ask these surface level questions that make our egos feel good. Like, let's ask like, how much money did you actually get through your company, go through your company, get through the tax system that we have to pay, then come into your personal life. And then it comes into your personal life, get through your travel schedule that you want to have a good life, get through your going out schedule, get through your buying a nice car schedule, and then have money left at the end, and then get to actually investing in stuff that spits you off a return. And so I'm like, let's talk about that funnel more, because most people don't have a lot after it goes through the lead generation funnel, the business funnel, pay taxes, come into your personal life, go on vacations, kids, cars, whatever, have leftover money, and then go invest 300, 400, 500,000 a year. So like, that's the conversation I think I want to have more of with people, because I'm like, you could ask that last question and know a lot. And I just haven't found out how to do it without feeling rude. And I wish I could find more people that wanted to do it.
Yeah. Well, I think that I feel exactly the same way, because at the end of the day, the facade of what you see in people is certainly gotten the facade that is putting out, like the unit count of an agent's business, is certainly something that in life, it's the same thing. It's like, you know, you see somebody driving a particular car or living in a particular area or neighborhood, and you automatically depict them with success when there's no real breadcrumbs of trails of how they ultimately got there in order to help you get there as well. And certainly when you're coming from a position where you're trying to do it in your own right, there's not really a how-to guide, and being able to ask those direct questions of people could get you there and get you deeper into that. Mm-hmm. But the thing I want to, there's two elements of this that I want to make sure that we get to. First of all, I want to go through your philosophy for paying for all of the things that you mentioned and then investing. Do you have sort of a bit of a philosophy, a percentage, a something that you can share with people that are thinking of to get you guys through to those long-term rentals or the rental properties that you've gotten? Like, is there a goal of how much is invested of your income, things along those lines? And I do want to get to the point where how you guys are living your life, you know, while still running your business.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's just at the beginning of the year, I kind of look at it and I think we've got to be a little bit more detailed. I think people think it's more complex than it is. It does take some work, but I don't think it takes too much work to not do it. But I think you've got to know one, like what's your burn rate in your business? And then what's your burn rate in your personal life? When I say burn rate, like what does it cost to operate? So my business, like what does it cost to operate? Mm-hmm. And then what in my personal life does it cost to operate to, and that's just like bare minimum to operate. So business operate, and then personal life operate. And then I then add in luxuries. Like I still want to live a quality life. So then I find out what that is on a monthly basis. So it's now going to be business expenses, personal expenses, just the bare minimums. Then it's the luxuries. Like if we want to take 20 vacations a year, like what does that cost? Yep. And then now it's like, what do we want to buy next? Like what assets do we want to buy?
Yep.
And then what will that take in down payments if it's homes? And then you start looking at that and it can be a little wild when you're like, okay, like I got to sell 96 homes this year. with how I make my money and my business model to go be able to do all of that and still have a few hundred thousand dollars to go throw it investing and stuff. And so
I ask you a direct question, Chris? Yeah. And again, if you feel uncomfortable answering, no problem, but what's the net worth goal?
Do you know what? Mine's more, so my question is as a passive income goal. Like I want to get to $50,000 a month passively. Okay. I'm close to halfway there. Okay. A month. So like, that's my goal though. I want $50,000 a month passively coming through my door.
How long have you been focusing on that to get yourself to 25 now?
You know, probably 3 years focused, probably 6 years kind of focused, you know, like for probably the last 6 years, it's definitely, I think that's just age, you know, me now almost being 40, you can see like the end of the road coming. And so I looked at it probably about 6 years where I was like, and I mean, end of the road, like, I don't want to work like this forever. Yeah,
I was going to say, there's some people that would be hating you right now.
I'm looking at it like, don't want to work when I'm 43, end of the road. So let's start there. So, you know, it was probably 6 years ago where I was like, I don't know if I want to like sell real estate like forever. Sure. So I think I was being open to that. And then that's when we started buying some stuff. And then it was probably like, I mean, 2020 where I was just like, we just went on a tear, and we bought like 16 homes, I think, in under 2 years. And so I was just like, back ending math. And that's really, if I could say two things, it's being able to back into math problem and work hard. And you just put those two together and like, hey, like, you know what you got to have in your personal life and your business and your luxuries. And then this is how much you want to go invest, like start getting out a calculator, put in some taxes that you got to pay, which is pretty, you know, wild. I feel. And then you just put that together and you're like, okay, like that's going to take this many homes to sell, divided by 12, figure out what it is a month, divided by 4, that's what it is a week. And then get to work. So when you get in at 9, it can't be like willy nilly. I'm like at 9 a.m. we can't be willy nilly. Like this 9 a.m. is like, this is my future. So 9 a.m. ain't just like sit here at 9 a.m. Like 9 a.m. is like, I built this plan out. Like you either get it or you don't. And it's really hard in life, I think, when, especially I work at home, when one room I can watch Netflix and get fat in. And one room I can go make a few million a year. Like that's a pretty challenging discipline every day when you're like, that room can lead to Netflix and being overweight. And that room could lead to work and make a few million this year. And figuring out how to get into that room has to take some internal drive, a bigger goal to say, hey, I don't want to do this half-ass forever. I'd rather just put massive focus in on this for a few more years and get out of it. And getting out of it, I don't know what that means. And I haven't come to terms with what that means. It's just having the option of getting out, I think, will be better if I'm in it and I can get out of it. I actually think the more financially secure that I've got in life, the easier my business has been, you know, because a deal falls through. I'm actually more concerned about the client than I am me. That's and great. So it's just everything's gotten easier as I focus more on my net worth. Because it's made my business so much easier to deal with any issues, to be more about clients and less about me. So yeah, man, that's kind of how I just back in math and just put a plan together.
Reverse engineering. I really love that. Sure. You just said that perfectly as well, that you guys are putting yourself in a financial position where the caring for the client, if it falls out, you care more about that than the deal itself. It's kind of, it's got me thinking about what you're doing is that your minimization of your team and more meat on the bone for each of those team members means that there's a higher quality individual that is out there representing your business versus the spray and pray approach of just, hey, I'm going to get as many people as I possibly can by guaranteeing them or giving them leads or whatever it is, and let's throw some shit against the wall and see what sticks, for lack of better terminology. So it's funny how like it's that financial freedom allows you to excel even further based on the care that you can give your clients, and then also the minimization of your team and making sure that there's good, strong compensation and some guaranteed compensation for people. I believe that they will go above and beyond for being the salary for that individual, you know, gives them some surety that allows them to focus a little bit deeper rather than any panic station. So I think that there's some wonderful takeaways there. Let's lead into now, how do you do all of this, making a few million dollars a year while still living your life?
You know, that's interesting. One, I'll always say like, we don't have kids. I do think that makes things a lot easier. I've actually, like, I used to say like, I don't know, you know, like we all got working hours, but I really do. As I've gotten older, I've been very self-aware to be like, you know what, like, was it easier for us not having to get to a baseball game at night or have to get to like soccer practice or a kid sick? So like, I have to first be like open to say like, you know, that makes our jobs, I think, a little bit easier. But, you know, and I've never been the one to be super structured either, which is so odd to say out loud. I have to say, I heard one time this guy say he was ambitiously lazy. And that was the closest word that I can think of, because I'm not like all super disciplined. I think I have enough focus on the goal that I have these probably intense 2 to 3 hours of my day where I work. And it's never really been time blocked in like any categorization of hours. I'm just like, hey, in a 24-hour period, I think there has to be like 3 hours of force on your mission, about 2 hours of like, just got to like answer things, you know, emails and phone calls, and then just let the day go where it needs to go. But that's really like, I can't say I'm super time blocked. I can't say I'm super structured. I get these moments of 2 to 3 hour spurts. Like, for example, like over the last year, I think I've recruited like 87 agents into EXP. And what's crazy about that, dude, is like, I knew a year ago, I wrote down my mission just like I wanted to buy 16 homes in 2 years. Like, I back into the math and what I'd have to do to get that. And so I have some people like, how did you pull that off? And I'm like, that was once again, reverse engineering, you know, and just writing down a goal, doing it backwards. And like, there's even instances where like, I'll go on a 2 day, like 8 hours a day where I'm doing that, and then just take a break on that mission for 2 or 3 days. But then in the 2, 3 days that I'm off that mission, we've got to get some deals through the door. And so, man, I wish I could say, and I wish it would just be stage talk if I got up here and I'm like, I'm 9 to 5 like this. And, you know,
I think that people are taking a breath of relief listening to you say that. You know, it's like one of those things that you said before that made me think, oh, I'm good. I'm not the only one that thinks that. Like, I just want to, how much are you worth? Like, just tell me how much you're worth and how you got there. Because like, again, like I'd cut the shit here for a minute. Okay. Yeah. And let's go to that. It's the same thing with that as well, is like you take a sigh of relief is yes, you're effective for a couple of hours a day, but yes, there's distractions and you're maybe flicking through social media a little bit, but if you can focus for those periods of time, you know, I think that, and have the larger goal in mind, I think there is a sigh of relief and some humanity that is on the other end of this podcast. People going, oh, good. Oh, there's someone else that's like that. That's great. Yeah,
and I think you actually, I think you can, as long as you have an on switch. You know, some people, I think, like if you can't be unstructured with no on switch. Like if you're unstructured and no on switch ever, like that's not going to be great. So I think that person probably does need to work on discipline. I think it's also interesting though, you know, someone would look at my life and be like, it's super disciplined, but I don't think so. So I think I've got to also be self-aware that maybe there's thermostats in life, you know, where like I sometimes like think I'm like ambitiously lazy, and someone else will be like, dude, you work all the time. And I'm like, I don't feel like I work all the time. So it's like, I think we all have different levels of how we define things. And so me maybe saying like, I'm not structured today, I also think of my day and I've been on like 7 appointments and I don't have like I'm Ubering to places because sometimes I don't like to drive and I like to work in the back of a car to save my time. Yep. And so it's just funny how I'm like, I've had a super busy day today, but then I'll end the day and be like, oh, I really didn't do that much. So I think that would be more of a thermostat level of just being comfortable now with a lot on your plate and acting like it's a little. Versus the person that does nothing in the day and you ask them like, what they do? And like, oh, I did so much. And I'm like, that's a thermostat issue. So I don't know. I think
so it's refreshing to hear you
say that. Out loud say that like I have many days where I'm not structured, but that on switch turns on. And when it turns on, it's a high gear and it's highly intense. And I can have some energy that people around me are like, whoa, but I'm like, that's on. So for 2 hours, I might be heavy that day, but then the rest of the day, I'm like, let's just chill.
Oh, it's like those people that never want to be known not to be working. Like I know of a couple of people that they'll have their staff in their office not allowed to tell anybody that if they're having a day off, or they might not even tell their staff that they're having a day off and just pretend like they're working external to the office, like, and oh no, I've got appointments all day. It's like, come on, man, like what is going on here? Now, don't get me wrong, I think that there's this depiction of how people think that they have to be. You know, and you know, you probably get that from a lot of the rah-rah sort of stuff that's out there, like the grinding culture and all of that type of stuff that is out there at the moment. But either way, it's great to hear some real truth in that. Yeah. I want to go into where you get your stimulation from. Okay. Sort of to round out the episode, Chris, is that, you know, podcasts, books, do you have any habits and routines, life hacks that you can share with the network that they can sort of latch onto?
Yeah. So, I mean, as far as like, I read a lot of books. And so I think of like lately I've read like 10X is greater than 2X. I think it's what it's called. Buy Back Your Time was a recent book that I read that was just fascinating. We all know it, but like it just broke it down in a way that was more relatable to me and just got me more jazzed up to like stop doing even more stuff that I don't like doing. What was the one book that we had at our mastermind that we had a read?
Oh, that was
the Almanac of Naval.
Yeah, Almanac of Naval. That's right. That's right. Did you end up reading the book of the speaker that was there? The Comfort Crisis. Yeah, Comfort Crisis. Did you read that?
I didn't, but I've heard him on several podcasts afterwards. I did a Masogi is what he would call it. So I did 75 hard right after that. I was trying to do something like that. I went for all 75 days. Those are some of the books. I go to a lot of masterminds. I try to get into some high level ones if I can, you know, rooms that I don't feel like I should be speaking in. Podcast, you know, I actually like listen to quite a few. I guess I have them right here. So, that's cool. No Days Off, you know, Brian Gubernick. It's a quick 6 minutes in the morning. Alex Hormozi. I listen to his podcast. Man, that guy's brilliant in business.
Where do you draw the line with Alex though? Like, cause I really enjoyed him for a while. And then like he got into, then after a little while, for some reason, I just felt like what he was talking about was just so irrelevant to just everyday life. Like it was too focused on philosophy versus the actual truth. I don't know. Have you gotten to that point with him?
You know, no, but I know the feeling that you have because I've disconnected from podcasts at a certain time. So I always question that because we have podcasts. So I'm like, do we change or do the people change? Right. So I think like we are just who we are. And so we're having a show. And so like, I sometimes think like maybe I'm talking about the same thing for years and people come in and come out when they like, cause I'm the, that it's my show and it's the audience because, I've noticed that like there was a time where like, I wouldn't listen to a certain person. I won't name names, but then like 6 months later, I was listening to him again. I was really enjoying it. And then I'll listen to him for 3 months and I'm like, I got to bounce out of that. So I'm also just open to, there's just stages. There's times when I need motivation in life and there's times when I don't. Like I'm just already self-geared motivated that few months. And so I don't want to listen to that stuff. And there's times where, you know, I want to listen to people on lead generation. That's all I listen to. And there's times where, you know, I'll go through stages where I'll listen to politics heavy for like a few months. And then I'm just like, I've got to bounce out of this. Like, I don't think it's serving me anymore. So it's like, I just have no absolutes really in my life like that. Like there's a few absolutes that I do have. One is my relationship with God. But outside of that, I'm just like everything else, like that and my wife, God and my wife, those are my absolutes. And then everything else, I'm like, hey, I'm just a human being here living a life. Like I can be interested in something one day and not be interested in the next day. And that does, I don't have to be all, I'm not like a tribe. Like, I don't have to say like, that's my tribe. Like, hey, this is fun today. Tomorrow, I'm like, that's not fun today. I want to do this. So I just kind of like, I have a lot of things that I like to listen to and I come in and out when I want to. And then I'll go through like times where I'm like, hey, I'm not going to listen to anything for like a week. Cause sometimes my brain just so full and I'm like, I don't think any more knowledge or people's opinions are going to do me any good. Mm. I think I have enough right now internally to fuel me for a week that like, I just got to focus on just my thoughts and getting my output out and go just close some deals, live my life, enjoy. And I actually don't need anybody's opinions. I don't need their teachings. And somebody who listens to a lot and reads a lot, I think you got to be self-aware when like maybe you've had too much and now just go implement, go enjoy your life and decide when you want to come back to that. So those are some books, those are some podcasts.
Chris, I think that like, as we round this out here is that I think is the life hack in itself that you can share with the team is be comfortable going in and out of the stages of your life. I think the one thing that I'm going to take away out of this podcast is the incredible self-awareness of yourself. I think that you've got an incredible measure from my perspective where you can see yourself, okay, that's enough for me in this. I'm going to go here, where a lot of people just stick to things because they've been told that consistency is the only way to be or whatever they've listened to or whatever the rhetoric is out there that they've ultimately bought into. So again, I just appreciate the transparency that you've brought to Rethink Real Estate, and it's been a complete pleasure to have you on.
Yeah, thanks, man. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. So about 75% of our audience hasn't liked, followed, or subscribed to our podcast. It would mean the world to us and it would help this podcast more than you know to expand our reach if you were to like, follow, or subscribe on any of the platforms that you're watching or listening on. Thanks again.